Campus FM presents a public lecture organised by the Archaeological Society called Beyond General Practice, The Life and Times of Dr. J.G. Baldacchino by Dr. Anton Bugeia.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the first activity of the Archaeological Society for this season 2005-2006. It's nice to see a crowd here tonight for our first event, which will be one of many others, and you will all can all find out about the events that are coming up in the next season on our shortly on our website www.archsoc.org.mt. This evening we are going to hear from Dr. Anton Bugeia on Beyond General Practice, The Life and Times of Dr. J.G. Baldacchino. Some of you in the room will probably remember Dr. Baldacchino, so you'll be interested to hear what Dr. Bugeia has to say. Dr. Bugeia is a medical doctor himself with an archaeological bent, an archaeological interest. Thank you, Dr. Bugeia. I leave the floor to you.
Thank you very much, Pat. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the Archaeological Society for accepting me to give this talk, and also I'd like to publicly thank the many people who over the past 4 years have helped me to build up a study of the life of Dr. Baldacchino, a person who I realize I have much in common with him. He was like myself, a medical doctor and into general practice. And that explains the general practice in the title. He had a surname beginning with a B. He practiced in my same the same locality as I do. And he also had another interest in his life other than general practice, which took quite a substantial amount of his time. For Dr. Baldacchino, it was natural history. For myself, it's obviously archaeology. And that explains the title, Beyond General Practice, because we're really going to deal with this aspect of his life. In fact, Dr. Baldacchino had two very important appointments with the museum department. He was curator of natural history, mostly active in the 1930s, and also he was the director of museum between 1946 and 1955. And to see it from a different perspective, it's really about a person who occupied a post in the museum before the war and was its director in the decade after the war. So although this is essentially a biographical description of Dr. Baldacchino, it also hints on the activity going on in the museum around this time. How did this research start? It was about 4 years ago that I was introduced to Dr. Claudio Sagona, and I immediately realized on our first encounter that she was looking around for a collection to study and eventually publish. And I knew of a collection formerly belonging to Dr. Baldacchino, and I was particularly interested to have it studied. So over the following months, we managed to finalize a catalogue of this collection. And when I say we finalized, this picture says it all. Dr. Claudio Sagona is there, intensely studying the pottery, comparing the colors to the charts and to the other books she has over there. And I'm in my usual behavior with archaeologists, taking photographs of everything except the collection. But basically, that is the collection formerly belonging to Dr. Baldacchino. It has part which is archaeological, mostly, it is mostly archaeological, but then there are some specimens which belong to natural history. And it was somewhere along the stage that I was asked to do a little bit of research on Dr. Baldacchino, and sentence after sentence, it grew to basically a study. Who was Dr. Joseph George Pallacchino? Like other persons, to try to trace the early childhood years of Joseph George, it's rather difficult. So really, I took the traditional approach and tried to study his father and also what was occurring to his family in his childhood years. And in fact, Pallacchino appears to have come from a strong medical background. His grandfather, Calcedonio, was a pharmacist in Lua. Calcedonio's brother was a district medical officer in Pietà. And Joseph's father, Giacomo Carmelo, was a medical doctor who graduated in 1889. And for the following year, he had to make a year in hospital, a further year in hospital, further training, as obliged by law, something that all the medical corps of 1889 didn't want. And in fact, they wrote to the government asking him to not to do this year of training. Well, they had to do this year of training, and their petition was unsuccessful, but it left us a unique record of the signatures of all the people in this course. This is Giacomo Carmelo Pallacchino, the father of the person who will be speaking about tonight. And here are the signatures: Joseph George Pallacchino, but then you immediately recognize their Temizamit. In fact, here we have a coincidence whereby we have a future director of the museum graduating the same year as the father of a future director of the museum. And incidentally, as regards these two persons, Pallacchino and Zammit, it appears that Pallacchino came first in the course rather than Zammit, something of particular interest. Giacomo Carmelo, after finishing this year in hospital, went into employment with the government and became a district medical officer. In the meantime, he married, and then when he got his appointment with the government, he moved from Lua to Siggiwi. And it is here in 1894 that Joseph George was born. In the following years, the family moved to Tarshin. The reason given by Giacomo Carmelo was that he wanted to have an area of practice very close to where his children were having their schooling. So probably Joseph George had his schooling in the Tarshin area, early school in Tarshin area. But then in 1909, the family moved to Ormi. It is here at Ormi that Joseph George Pallacchino entered the Lyceum, entered the preparatory course in medicine, and graduated as a medical doctor the 17th December 1919. And here is a memory of that, what have been certainly a good day for Joseph George, the day of graduation. Unlike his father, he went into private medical practice, serving as a general practitioner for the following 13 years at Ormi. But in this decade, we start seeing a glimpse of what was to come in later years. In fact, in the early 1920s, he applied for the post of chemistry at university. So we're already getting an idea that here is a person who is more on the academic side of things. But then in the 1930s, when one looks at the list of items donated to the museum, we find that in 1930, Joseph George donated to the museum a mineralogical specimens. And this is really quite important, because this means that here we have a person who is interested in natural history, who probably has a collection and is going around the islands or going around auctions to get items for his collection, and who has enough that he can afford to give to the museum. But he's not simply a serious, he's not simply a collector, but he has a great interest in the subject. In fact, there is documentary evidence that at this time he starts attending the museum very, very often. And not only this, but he also starts writing to the Natural History Museum in London. And this is the first letter that I managed to trace of this correspondence with the keeper and other high persons at the Natural History Museum in London. And one thing that immediately comes out is that as early as 1931, correspondence addressed to Baldacchino is addressed at the Valletta Museum, at a time when Baldacchino didn't even have an appointment with the department. In fact, for the following 2 years, Baldacchino was involved in excavations at a fisher at Mqabba. He also catalogued the collection of Antonino Caruana Gatto with a certain Mr. Pensa from the Botanical Gardens. And it is in the early 30s that the former curator of natural history, Giuseppe Despot, became ill and eventually retired from service, and Baldacchino took his place in 1933. At the same time he takes this post, he starts correspondence with the Natural History Museum at in London, is addressed to this lady here, which is Dorothea M.A. Bate, who really helps Baldacchino interpret the finds he starts making in the islands. Something which really comes over and over again in Baldacchino's life is that he enters appointments with the museum at really difficult times. In fact, in the early 1930s, there was a report on the museums in the Mediterranean, particularly even that of Malta, the Squire and Herdman report, which really criticized the museum in many aspects. And the natural history section really took the brunt of this criticism. It described the specimens as unlabeled, badly stuffed, crowded, and Baldacchino, as a new curator, had to answer to this report. In fact, at the time, the Ardalan Museum was open. The Ardalan Cave had been open to the public in the previous months, and over the following years, Baldacchino, who was curator of natural history at this time, started wiring together the many bones we still see today at the Ardalan Museum, and eventually managed to finalize this section, which is still visible today, of the museum at Ardalan. He not only contributed this museum to Ardalan, but he started once again excavations in different parts of the islands, particularly at Ardalan, keeping very detailed notes as regards to the stratigraphy, the description of finds. And here, I think, this is another good moment for Baldacchino. Certainly, he remembered this experience for long, and this was the occasion when he discovered the elephant tusk, at Ardalan, and that is in the 1930s. Unfortunately, this tusk has gone missing in the 1970s. But it's not only at Ardalan that he carries out his excavations, but in other parts of the islands. For example, he excavates a placing deposit at Tavnezia, also a quaternary deposit at Marfa. It is, for those of you, I think most of you have been at Marfa, opposite the Paradise Bay Hotel. There's a beach, and if you look at that beach, you realize that the size of the beach is really red in color. That is actually a Pleistocene deposit. He restarted excavations at Bourmaz. He excavated another fissure within a quarry at Tal Jenin, and as was occurring at this time, he forwarded finds to the Natural History Museum in London, and it is here in these through these bones sent to London that DMA Bate recognizes two new species of mammals previously undescribed from Malta. Other quarries, and very interesting is that he had occasion to study a tomb found at Tal Bayada in Ormi. And because he was very much interested into natural history, he realized that within the pottery items there were some snails. And he lists the species and the number of shells found within these pottery items. And this can be taken up again, possibly it could be useful today in determining the type of environment that was present around the tomb at the time. But even when one looks at this list of part of the list of excavations Baldacchino carried out, one really notices, for example, Tavnezia. Tavnezia is a very, very much close to the place where recently there was roadworks connected to the recent roadworks. We have mentioned here a number of quarries, and it is really people like Baldacchino who at the time documented these finds, and I think it really depends very much on people within the museum department to once again rekindle, because these things are still being discovered, but we still need someone who really pushes things forward and study the natural history aspect of these finds. Now, the 30s were very much a time of change for the museum department. We already heard how Giuseppe Despot retired, and in his place Baldacchino was appointed in his place. We have the death of Temiz Amit in 1935, and his place taken by Carmelo Rizzo. And instead of Temiz Amit, Charles Amit was appointed curator of archaeology. Being the son of Themistocles Amit, he was very much acquainted with archaeology, but it was realized that Captain Zamit was in need of further education. And he was sent abroad to further his studies in different places, British Museum and other places. And for a small bracket of time, for a small period, Baldacchino was entrusted with the curatorship of the archaeological section. And he documented a number of sites with other people, like, for example, the architect Robert Gallia. And this was one site where Baldacchino gave a report. This is the site of Ortin Limdawar, the Concezioni Temple. And when one reads really the report in the museum annual reports, it's once again a person interested in natural history writing a report, giving details and listing the finds one after the other. Another opportunity for Baldacchino to be involved with archaeology came during the war, when Captain Zamit was sent abroad for military practice. And it's really the World War was a time when activity continued within the museum department. We tend to underestimate the effect of the war on the museum department itself, but some changes really did occur at this time. Obviously, there was damage to a number of sites. For example, damage is reported to Tarshin temples and the boundary wall around Koradin temple. There was also damage to Takachatura. Baldacchino was, whilst excavating at Ardalan, was called to repair, to aid in the repair of Takachatura just before the war, and he had to see damage and report damage done at Takachatura. It was a time also of discovery. Some tombs were discovered in different places around the islands. Certainly, one thing that happened was that the collections of natural history received a direct hit in one of the air raids, and whilst all the animals, the stuffed animals were destroyed, luckily the fossils were preserved following this this attack. They managed to survive. There were also a few changes within the museum department at the time. There was an attempt to surround and enclose Hajar Aym with a boundary wall, particularly at this time because of damage being done to Hajar Aym by people visiting the place, something that did not materialize before the 1960s, and something which is very much overlooked. The museum managed to secure the E.A. Guder photographic collection during the war for the sum of £1,000, and this is a magnificent collection which is certainly very useful for studies of our past. There were certainly other discoveries done at the time and losses, finds which were not reported. Certainly this was particularly one of them. Here we see a Roman catacomb, and within the passages of the Roman catacomb there is the debris being deposited of deposit after nearby shelters were cut. So something which happened during the war. And Ardalan, very interesting, something which is not that much known, is that Ardalan was at first, during the war, converted into an air raid shelter and later was turned into a fuel depot. Following the war, the acting curator, Hannibal Scicluna, passed away, and in 1946, Baldacchino was appointed director of the museum. The antiquities around the islands had suffered during the war, and there was urgent need for their restoration to start. And something which is characteristic of the times is that truly restorations does occur at a number of megalithic sites, but this restoration is also continued with excavations being done on site. Restorations occurred at the Tarshin temples. It was not the first attempt to do restorations at the site, because in the 1930s there was the idea of constructing, of roofing actually, the temples for their protection. If anyone is interested into this aspect, there's an interesting article by Katja Straud on the subject. But even though the Carnegie Corporation was approached in the late 1930s, nothing materialized because of the advent of the war, and really restorations started following the war. Also, excavations were done at the time at the Tarshin temples, and by the time Baldacchino finished his directorship, there was some of these finds and earlier finds were exhibited in a museum, a small museum attached close to the Tarshin temples. It's rather a characteristic also at the time. Something which we find over and over again is that these small museums opening near the archaeological sites, we have a later one occurring near the Hal Safin temples. More radical interventions were done at Hajar Im and the Naidra. Excavations were also carried out. Incidentally, this picture taken from the Times of Malta records the find of a number of statuettes found enclosed within that small space in one of the apses within Hajar Im. But equally important are the restorations which occurred at Hajar Im at the time. So much so that the modern idea, the modern view of Hajar Im was created around this time. Here is an aerial view of Hajar Im in what I like to describe as Hajar Im with a pronounced monumentality. That is, Hajar Im standing without a way from Hajar Im standing as a monument. In contrast to the situation or the Hajar Im as it existed in the mid-19th century, where it was surrounded by this rural landscape, where you had fields around it, where you have people still plowing the surrounding fields. And it was in the post-war period that Hajar Im was extracted from this landscape and given and transformed into the monument it is today. In this transformation, a number of changes occurred. There were removal of a number of rubble walls. There was also removal of the debris, probably the same debris that had resulted from previous excavations. And there was also, when one compares the photographs, removal of much of the soil cover around the temples. And although the changes occurring at Hajar Im at this time have helped the way the monument is presented today, for example, the lintel above the entrance of Hajar Im was reinstated particularly at this time, but we certainly have lost a lot during these interventions. And it is something, it's an ongoing debate of what is really the effect of restoration. Is it moving things forward? But what are the problems with our interventions on the temples? Being a director of the museum for a whole decade undoubtedly meant documentation of a number of discoveries. But while discoveries make news, it's really their interpretation, their publication, which makes archaeology. And here we have, for example, two items found from a tomb at Ain Ayet, which, through the help of foreign scholars, were dated to around the 7th century and are still pivotal to our dating of the colonization of the Phoenicians on the Maltese Islands. Help from the British school in Rome and other entities also were useful, for example, in the documentation of tombs found at Tal Lidna and Ain Dwili. And although these are two different toponyms, but they're actually describing sites on opposite sides of the same valley. And once again, these discoveries are witness to the increasing urban development that was occurring in Malta around this time, and which the director of the museum had to report on the discoveries being made at the time. Here we have a case where an inscription was found in one of the catacombs at St. Agatha and St. Paul. A very important discovery was made by the Public Works Department at Zabuch, where a number of tombs, prehistoric tombs, dating to what was later called as the Zabuch phase, was found. And once again, together with the help of John Evans, these tombs were published, and a new phase into the prehistoric sequence of the Maltese Islands was added. Incidentally, Baldacchino had, previous to this discovery, through his interest in being a collector, had a number of Zabuch phase pots, which were very much instrumental in trying to reconstruct the whole pattern of pottery, the pottery repertoire found within this tomb. Other finds were made at the time. For example, this is the Safi dolmen, which was later, the capstone was removed to the museum's department because the dolmen itself stood in front of a garage and the owner threatened to destroy the dolmen, and the capstone is still to be found in the stores of the museum's department. For the ongoing debate on whether the public is interested or not interested in archaeology, there is one thing certain, that when discoveries are made, the public is interested. And here we see people gathering around Baldacchino there in the center, enlarged down here, gathering and looking over finds made at Tacha'i at Rabat. But while this event is recorded, just recorded in a photograph, it is the governor looking over finds at Kolashara that makes news and comes up in the newspapers. And I believe what would happen to archaeology if pictures like this start appearing in the newspaper, showing people around finds. I think that would certainly help the public's interest in the subject. Baldacchino's directorship also coincided with two very important surveys occurring on the islands. One of them was the result of the war itself, whereby a number of persons were given the task of reporting on the historic sites present on the islands. And it's impressive how these people, in a few months, over 200 meetings, managed to document over 2,000 historic sites present on the islands. As part of the survey, for example, the rock cut pens found at Mjarishini were documented for the first time. And I'm showing this picture deliberately because it shows the way these remains were catalogued, were numbered, and were also described, sometimes planned, sometimes photographed. And not only were the finds listed and published in a list, but also plotted on maps, which still survive at the National Museum of Archaeology. Another survey, which was occurring at the time, was the survey which finally resulted in the publication of the book, well-known book by Evans, Prehistoric Antiquities of the Maltese Islands, published in 1971. As I think we're starting to appreciate, this was not the job or was not the result of the work of a single person, but really it was the work of a number of persons. And I would like to take over or add upon what has been said by Dr. Nicholas Vella last Friday on where he described how after the death of Luigi Ugolini, a number of newspaper articles appeared in the Times of London, and this moved the British authorities to do something and start studying and surveying the antiquities present in the Maltese Islands. Before the war, we find Worth Perkins being approached to start doing something as a counterblow to Italian propaganda. And we read here in a later correspondence, owing to the propaganda used in Malta by the Italians about the British lack of interest in the historical treasures of Malta, we appointed Professor Worth Perkins to go out and make a survey. In another letter, it is stated that actually his appointment at the university was a sort of cover-up, really, to this survey being done. But the war prevented the progress of this survey, particularly as by 1943, Worth Perkins had another task to do in Italy. But then, in 1947, Eifer Evans was commissioned to write a report on higher education, and there he identified the rich heritage, particularly the megalithic remains, as being very much suitable for a survey. By 1949, the University of Malta made an application to study these remains, and in the following months a grant was approved for the purpose. Things progressed rapidly. In 1950, Worth Perkins was made advisor on the survey. By October 1952, the plans of Hajar Im, Nider and Tarshin were ready, done by architect students of the Department of Architecture. Evans, together with Wright, managed to survey the Hypogeum in late 1952, and the plans of Gigantilla were available by 1953. Charles Lamid managed to finalize the catalogue of the pottery by 1953. Evans, in the same year, went to Sicily to try and compare what the results gained in Malta with those in Sicily. Things progressed in the following years. The 1955, the survey of the megalithic monuments were described as complete, and all the pottery catalogued and indexed, so one would expect publication soon. But then there were problems with grants, problems with people having other appointments, and the study lingered on until it was published in 1971. How does Baldacchino fit into this survey? He certainly is documenting as helping towards the survey, allowing people to study the artifacts present within the museum. But the relationship between Baldacchino and scholars at the British School in Rome wasn't very much going well in the early 1950s. And it's really interesting, when I tried to study why there was this these problems started cropping out in the early 1950s, the result of this search was interesting in itself, because it appears that in the early 1950s, Baldacchino wanted a survey of the Phoenician antiquities found on the islands. In fact, he approached Dr. Donald Harden from Oxford University, and in fact Harden paid a visit in April 1950 to study prepare a report of the situation as regards the Phoenician antiquities present in Malta. And in his report, Harden says that there's a need for a reassessment of past research. There's a need to finalize a corpus of Phoenician tombs and contents, and then to provide distribution map of these tombs. to compare all the finds with those present in other Mediterranean countries. One should use air photography to try to search new sites formerly belonging to the Phoenicians. And then he also commented on other aspects of the working of the museum's department, namely that the museum department needs a good library and needs a lot of technical assistance. So whilst the university was pushing the survey for prehistoric antiquities, here is Baldacchino trying to push and getting grants to push forward this Phoenician survey, and obviously that led to a clash for some time. But then in the end, the Phoenician survey didn't progress, and it was only the prehistoric survey that finally that was finalized in later years. Something very much overlooked as regards to the works of the museum's department is the works of the Antiquities Committee. Here we see Baldacchino, who was director of the museum but was also the secretary of this Antiquities Committee. The Antiquities Committee had taken the role of the committee of the management of the museum, and now its role is taken by other institutions like the Superintendents of Cultural Heritage, the DCC and HAC of the Malta Environment and Planning Authority. And their work is very much overlooked, but it is remarkable. For example, they managed to preserve a number of towers found in the islands. They also were involved in the restoration of St. Angelo. In the decade after the war, a medieval chapel was found at Cospicua, and the Antiquities Committee intervened to preserve it, although allowing the building of flats above the chapel, but the chapel still exists today. A number of windmills were preserved. Obviously, some did actually get destroyed. This is really shocking, that there were attempts to dismantle the Banca Giuratale, I presume that in Gozo, but even to dismantle the whole length of the Winiacur Aqueduct Museum, but at least this was saved. So really, the Antiquities Committee is a subject and an area of the museum's department which needs to be looked upon. There were other works done by Baldacchino, for example, involvement to trying to get some of the bronze items from the Shortino collection towards the museum. Even this place, the premises of the Malta Society of Arts, Manufacturing and Commerce, was restored at the time, and other restorations, studies did occur at this time. In 1955, Baldacchino retired, his place taken by Captain Charles Zammit, and it is at this time that Baldacchino takes an appointment with the University of Malta, an appointment as an additional lecturer in biology. At the time, he continued to meet friends. Here we see one photograph, another one here. I am informed that there is Professor Coleiro, Baldacchino is over here. There's Vincenzo de Pasquale and other friends going around the islands, visiting historical places. In the meantime, he grew old and older until Baldacchino passed away on the 7th July 1973. How are we to look on the life of Dr. Joseph George Baldacchino? We have mentioned and listed a number of works he did in his life, but I think it's now high time that we should look back towards Baldacchino rather than concentrate on Baldacchino, to consider his achievements within the development of archaeology and natural history on the island. His activity in natural history marks a very important spike of activity occurring in the 1930s. We have to remember that students of natural history were very active in the 19th century, but then there was the work of Giuseppe Despot in the early decades of the 20th century, and Baldacchino once again rekindled the interest in natural history, and in recent years, for example, we have the works of Zabit Menpil, once again bringing interest into the subject. We had a number of surveys done of the island's antiquities. The first survey was that done by Gianfrancesco Abela, who really listed the sites present in the islands, the megalithic sites and other finds sites of interest. We have surveys being updated by Chantar. And then we have the very important survey done by Caruana and published in 1882, which rather than being just a survey, it's also a report on the state of preservation of the finds done at the time. Then we have the survey done in the 1930s by Ugolini, and then we have our two surveys, which we mentioned today, survey of the historic monuments and the prehistoric surveys done on our antiquities. Surveys continued in the following years, surveys done by Diana Wilner, Multi Environment Planning Authority, and survey linked to the Brockdorf stone circle. So, once again, the Baldacchino years fit within this period, these surveys done on the islands. As I said before, the Baldacchino years were very important years as regards to the restoration of megalithic monuments. We have interest in the state of the megalithic monuments mentioned, for example, by Mazzara in the early 19th century. We have restorations occurring in the late 19th century by Caruana at Hajar Eym. And then, as we mentioned, we have interest really in the state of preservation of the megalithic monuments starting to get momentum in the 1930s by Temiz Amid, but it's after the war that through the restoration of a number of megalithic temples was started, and it really continues today with the ideas of covering the temples with tents, etc., etc. It was a time, the Baldacchino years, was a time where Evans was in Malta and he was trying to construct a prehistoric culture sequence on the island, and also the importance of the Ain Ayyid tomb in the reconstruction of the Ain Ayyid tomb in the history of the Phoenicians in Malta. I think this brings to an end to my talk tonight. Although Baldacchino was director of the museum's department just 50 years ago, this is recent history, but I believe we should really appreciate his role and also the works of the museum department in recent years to help us understand what's really going around us today. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Bugeya, for that interesting talk about Dr. Baldacchino. Personally, I did not know a lot about him, and you really managed to bring him alive. And it is important, not just so that we remember Dr. Baldacchino, but also because these people, these protagonists of archaeology have created the archaeological context in which we live today. So certainly they have contributed, And it's important that they should be remembered again in the context of their life and times. And I think you brought that out very, very well. And thank you very much. The Archaeological Society thanks you for that. Would anybody like to ask some questions? If there is somebody who would like to ask a question, I would ask you to wait until you have the microphone in your hand. Any questions? Lovely. Thank you.
I presume he was not married.
No, he wasn't.
Another similarity between himself and you. I am the only direct link. He used to teach me biology at the university. My question is, however, was there an overlap between Ugolini and Baldacchino?
No, there wasn't actually an overlap between Ugolini and Baldacchino. Ugolini finished his survey that in the 1930s, but then as a response after Ugolini died, as a response to his work, there was interest in the British authorities making a survey on the prehistoric antiquities present on the islands. And really, when the survey started to get going on and to gain momentum, it was a time when Baldacchino was director of museum. So that is really the link with Ugolini.
Anybody else like to ask a question? Thank you. I'd just like to make a comment that listening to your talk, it's always very salutary to realize that the same questions were being asked in 1930 as are being asked in 2005. I think this is something we have to come to grips with, that there are certain things that have improved enormously, but certain things which are questions which still need to be resolved. And of course, the covering of the temples is certainly one of them. And that seems as though we're sort of on the way to that, but it is still not actually, has not been resolved as a project, really. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you very, very much again, Dr. Bougea, for your talk. Thank you.